Together, they tell the story of one particular planet whose inhabitants watched, with mild interest, huge continent-wrecking slabs of ice slap into another world which was, in astronomical terms, right next door, and then did nothing about it, because that sort of thing only happens in outer space. An intelligent species would at least have found someone to complain to. Anyway, no one seriously believes in that story, because a race quite that stupid would never even have discovered Slood. Much easier to discover than fire, and only slightly harder to discover than water. People believe in all sorts of other things, though. For example, there are some people who have a legend that the whole universe is carried in a leather bag by an old man. They're right, too. Other people say, hold on, if he's carrying the entire universe in a sack, right, that means he's carrying himself and the sack inside the sack, because the universe contains everything, including him. And the sack, of course, which contains him and the sack already, as it were. To which the reply is, well? All tribal myths are true, for a given value of true. It is a general test of the omnipotence of a god that they can see the fall of a tiny bird, that only one god makes notes and a few adjustments so that next time it can fall faster and further. We may find out why. We may find out why mankind is here, although that is more complicated and begs the question, where else should we be? It would be terrible to think that some impatient deity might part the clouds and say, damn, are you lot still here? I thought you discovered Slood 10,000 years ago. I've got 10 trillion tons of ice arriving on Monday. We may even find out why the duck-billed platypus. Not why it is anything, just why it is. Snow, thick and wet, tumbled onto the lawns and roofs of Unseen University, the Discworld's premier college of magic. It was sticky snow, which made the place look like some sort of expensive yet tasteless ornament, and it caked around the boots of Macabre, the head Bledlow, as he trudged through the cold, wild night. A Bledlow is a cross between a porter and a proctor. A Bledlow is not chosen for his imagination, because he usually doesn't have any. Two other Bledlows stepped out of the lee of a buttress and fell in behind him on a solemn march towards the main gates. It was an old custom, centuries old, and in the summer a few tourists would hang around to watch it, but the ceremony of the keys went on every night in every season. Mere ice, wind and snow had never stopped it. Bledlows in times gone past had clambered over tentacled monstrosities to do the ceremony. They'd waded through floodwater, flailed with their bowler hats at errant pigeons, harpies and dragons, and ignored mere faculty members who'd thrown open their bedroom windows and screamed imprecations along the lines of, "Stop that damned racket, will you? What's the point?" They'd never stopped, or even thought of stopping. You couldn't stop tradition. You could only add to it. The three men reached the shadows by the main gate, almost blotted out in the whirling snow. The Bledlow on duty was waiting for them.
"Halt! Who goes there?"
he shouted. Macabre saluted.
"The Arch-Chancellor's keys." "Pass the Arch-Chancellor's keys."
The head Bledlow took a step forward, extended both arms in front of him with his palms bent back towards him, and patted his chest at the place where some Bledlow long buried had once had two breast pockets. Pat, pat. Then he extended his arms by his sides and stiffly patted the sides of his jacket. Pat, pat.
"Damn! Could have sworn I had them a moment ago,"
he bellowed, enunciating each word with a sort of bulldog carefulness. The gatekeeper saluted. Macabre saluted.
"Have you looked in all your pockets?"
Macabre saluted. The gatekeeper saluted. A small pyramid of snow was building up on his bowler hat.
"I think I must have left them on the dresser. It's always the same, isn't it? You should remember where you put them down. Hang on, perhaps they're in my other jacket."